Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in time for the weekend edition. The weekend edition, which is, of course, the radio program. We are talking politics, KER Politics. Going to start out with Jimmy talking about a new station that picked up our show. Jimmy, you're on, bud.
You bet. So we want to welcome KYKN listeners, KYKN 1430 in Salem, Oregon. Yep. And we're really happy to expand to that market. You know that the capital there of Oregon needs some another political view than what they normally get. And we're happy to have them on board. We would like you that are listening to the show to reach out to our blog. It's, you can look it up. You can just KER Politics. And we post editorials during the week that are just posted to the blog, and then we do this radio show on the weekend. So welcome, and I think we're going to have a good show today. We're going to talk a little bit about, of course, the biggest news, the classified documents in Joe Biden and what the implications are with the Penn Center in China. We'll probably talk a little bit about economics in our second segment. We'll talk about Ukraine in a kind of a broader view than what many of you might hear. And then we'll wrap that up with politics, specific political issues that are happening out there in the last segment. So welcome in, and let's get started, Al.
Yeah, you know, I want to say one thing. I think we've got the best political blog out there. We have upwards of 100 comments every single day. The comments are opinions, some very, very excellent opinions from people who are really, really, they really put together all the information out there on political issues. I'd like to have you guys take a look at it. And if you care to comment, please do. We don't publish anything in terms of how people can get hold of you or whatever, so don't worry about that. Jimmy, you know, it's funny, but the Mar-a-Lago situation with the documents was a very big deal in the eyes of the Democrats. And, it was all over the news, much greater extent than anything during that particular time frame. Now Joe Biden is in the same position. He's got classified documents at his home and also at his beach house, both of those locations obviously being in Delaware. I think that, quite frankly, I find it fascinating that it's not getting nearly the press coverage that Mar-a-Lago got. Boy, if that doesn't tell you how the press is slanted, nothing does.
No kidding, Al. And what we're seeing right now is an unbelievable effort by the left to actually cover for him. It's actually quite disturbing to see. And here are the reasons why it's so important that there are very big distinctions between what's happened here. Joe Biden, as vice president, kept classified documents in his home and then in his office in the Penn Center. The Penn Center is at the University of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
It's a program that was actually highly funded by the Chinese government. In fact, the Chinese government from around 2013 have actually invested $67 million into the University of Pennsylvania. And then in the just 2.5 or 3 years that Joe Biden was a, quote, professor there, he never taught a class, he did give guest lectures, they gave $47 million. So these classified documents were found inside an office there on the 2nd of November, prior to the midterm election, reported to the Department of Justice on the 4th of November. I'm sorry, I hope I said that right, 2nd of November. Then the 4th of November, they reported DOJ. DOJ said nothing. They found more documents in his garage in December, and they found another document this week in his home. So here's the big difference, Al. Mar-a-Lago and Donald Trump, as president, had the authority to declassify documents. He had declassified the documents that they're arguing about and was legally fighting and talking and discussing with the National Archives and the FBI about how to handle these documents that he had in Mar-a-Lago before the Department of Justice responded to a request from the National Archives to go ahead and take those back. And then they filed a special prosecutor, and they're going forward. And this was absolutely headline news that Trump was going to go to jail for classified material.
Right.
Now, here's the contradiction with the Biden issue. He had no authority to declassify these documents. The National Archives didn't know that he had them. They were stored in unsecure areas. Mar-a-Lago was secure with Secret Service security, and the FBI had looked at the storage area and said, hey, put a lock on it, you'll be fine. Very big differences. But what is more important than anything else is the fact that this information, these classified documents, open the door to a much broader problem that the Biden family is going to face with the influence of China. When you see $47 million going to the University of Pennsylvania to help fund his this Biden Center, then you wonder how much influence are they buying. And this is after Hunter Biden, we know from documented evidence from his own personal laptop, had worked multiple events in order to satisfy China. And China and the University of Pennsylvania, with the money that they were given for the Penn Center, was paying Joe Biden $900,000 in those 3 years, as well as other staffers like Anthony Blinken, now the Secretary of State, and other members of his administration, while they waited for the campaign that came forward in 2019 and 2020.
Boy, if I were a college professor and somebody popped $900,000, if my potential as a professor was for the university that I was working for to pop close to $1 million into my pocket, I probably would have gone into that business, to make a living. But that's really not quite that way for Mr. and Mrs. Average Professor.
No, and here's, this is the worst part about this story. And of course, members of the Republican-controlled House are now going to investigate. They're out there. Jim Jordan in the government misinformation effort, and of course Jim Comer, who's going to be looking at this oversight. What they've identified is that the University of Pennsylvania, who received over $67 million over the last decade from the Chinese government, lobbied in early 2022. To have the Department of Justice shut down the FBI's operation that was evaluating and investigating Chinese influence in academia. They sent a letter with 170 signatories from faculty and staff at the University of Pennsylvania to the Department of Justice, saying that they understand the problem with Chinese influence, but this is... No kidding, they said it was racial profiling and racial bias.
Yeah.
Merrick Garland, the attorney general, within 2 weeks of receiving that letter, shut down that program, shut down the FBI program. This is just weeks after Christopher Wray at the Reagan Library in California had given a speech talking about how dangerous Chinese influence in academia was and how widespread it was and how important it was for the FBI to continue these investigations. If this is not unbelievable corruption and borderline treason by the people that are supposed to be defending this nation against Chinese expansion,
right,
I don't know what is.
Well, this is just kind of one of the many variables that are going into this particular subject. I remember you and I were talking about this probably...
And we're just about up on time, too.
I know we are. I remember you and I were talking about this about 6 months ago, and I want to talk about some of the other universities that have gotten in trouble with this thing. I mean, we're talking about Harvard, we're talking about Princeton, we're not just talking about the university that you mentioned. Okay, you guys, Jimmy's right. We got to take a real quick commercial break. Stick around, be right back.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. You know, in the last segment, we were talking about the funding that China has sent to some of the topper, better schools in the United States, talking about the school where Joe Biden is involved, but let's talk about some of the other schools. Let's talk about Harvard. Let's talk about MIT. Let's talk about Princeton. The Chinese influence in institutions of higher learning on the United States is absolutely phenomenal, huge. Jimmy, you want to fill us in?
Yeah, you bet. So the Chinese, since the late 90s, have had a program that was kind of written by a couple of colonels in their war college called Unrestricted Warfare. And basically, they want to use every other method that they possibly can to influence the outcomes and increase China's power in the world without going to direct military conflict, because they knew at the time that they couldn't compete with the United States and the West militarily. Now, that gap is closing, but part of the reason why that gap is closing is because they've been grabbing so much technology and information from Western industry companies and academic institutions. And the way they've done it is by embedding people that report back to China or grab information and steal it. The FBI, over the last few years, based on a Trump-era policy, had gone through and started this program to identify these problems. And they've identified it at MIT, at Harvard. A large number of people have actually been tried or at least kicked out or are on trial for a lot of these actions. So it's a very dangerous problem that will have a large impact in the future of Chinese military development and our national security concerns, and of course influencing many, many aspects of our academic system.
The number of Chinese students, actually mainland Chinese students in the United States on student visas, is actually astronomically high also.
You bet. And so the idea was, hey, you know, Chinese come here, they learn Western society ideas, and then they go back and maybe they'll have an influence there. That's actually being inverted. And the reason why that's being inverted is because the Chinese have such a tight control over the social aspects of people's lives through the technology that they've used for social credit scoring and
right.
And threatening families. So it's a dangerous situation. And of course, it will directly impact the economy of the United States over time. And of course, our economy is not doing very well right now.
No.
Yeah, you want to go into those numbers?
Yeah, I'd like to go into the economy right now. Let's first of all talk about inflation. Inflation month over month was kind of decent, but the aggregate inflation numbers are pretty high. Inflation in the United States is still 6.5%.
Yeah, year over year, the numbers came out this week, 6.5%. The big reduction in the CPI number, and this is a very important thing to understand, the overall consumer price index number dropped, or came out at expectations, but it dropped from the previous months by some. But the expectations were 6.5, came out at 6.5. And the reason why is because primarily from fuel, gas prices dropped about 9%, and used cars, I think, dropped. Those are the two biggest movers.
Let's talk about some of the ones that are moving up. Let's talk about groceries. I actually have a certain amount of trepidation when I walk into the local grocery store. The numbers are really going up, Jimmy.
Oh, it's crazy what's happening. Eggs, I think, is a big example right now, but 3%. So these are really big numbers, or 0.3%, I should say,
yeah.
For food going up. But here's what people need to realize. In December, gas prices went down quite a bit. Demand
yeah.
was down, and there were some production issues that were, you know, that Kate brought it up. But since December, for January, we've seen here where I live about a 10% increase in overall fuel prices.
Yeah.
So the January numbers are more than likely to be higher again, combined with the food. Now this is the volatile general overall numbers, but the core inflation numbers rose 0.3%, which was expected, but that's still
give me the time inflation. Frame, Jimmy. Jimmy, give me the time frame on that 3%.
That's overall
mm-hmm.
From the November to December, the December
right.
numbers. So what we're seeing is core inflation continues to rise. the volatile numbers with food and gas. Gas dropped so much it changed that number a little bit, but we're still seeing inflation, which means the Fed looks, and they do, they look at the core inflation rate, which means they're going to continue looking at increased rate hikes until they push back the employment numbers. Yeah. And that inflation number gets to their target number, which is 2%. So 6.5 and 2%, a big gap. And that's why you're not seeing a lot of excitement over these numbers.
No. It's really interesting, the problems that the Democrats are facing, actually problems of their own making in terms of inflation, employment, et cetera, et cetera. The numbers that really bother me, though, are the numbers that pertain directly to society. And what do I mean by that? Well, I mean numbers like the amount of civil unrest in countries, the amount of violence in states, I meant to say, the amount of increasing violence in the states. I mean, I am amazed, quite frankly, that Americans are just screaming about that right now.
Well, and murder rates are significantly higher. You know, I had a discussion with one of my boys the last couple of days, and he was like questioning the numbers on murder rates. And
yeah.
He went back and looked and goes, oh my gosh, they're up nationally really high.
Yeah.
And in some urban areas, they're exceptionally high. And these urban areas are run by progressives who have put in this justice reform and allowing people back out on the street.
Yeah.
And that all, it's all related somewhat to economics. I mean, economics is not all the solution, but when people have jobs and they're busy, they're doing things. When they have a mental, positive mental view in society, they're going to do better. We're going to have less violence and destruction. And what we've got now with the continuation of this emergency COVID lockdown, what we've seen with the economic policies taking away U.S. domestic energy, and the overall problems that are out there with industry saying, wait a second, what's happening? Because everybody expects a recession coming up in the next in this next year. These have a big negative impact on our society. And you're right, it's very damaging.
Very damaging psychologically, because, you know, a subject that we haven't talked about for quite some time now is the increase in the rates of significant depression, the increase in the rates of suicide, etc. Those are all very, very negative mental issues that are going on in the United States. And the rates in each of those segments are really skyrocketing.
They are, and it's
yeah.
Suicide rates are incredibly high, and of course, we're seeing numbers from COVID with excess death. Not from COVID, correct? Let me go back. Not from COVID for excess
right.
deaths,
right.
And that shows a lot of negativity in society. So it's going to be a tough. It's going to be a tough next
it's
year.
It's going to be a tough one. We're going to have to close on that because the top of the hour news is coming up. We will be back talking about hopefully a little brighter topics right after the news.
Well, maybe Ukraine's not so bright, but yeah.
We'll see. We'll be back, you guys.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Time for the second half of the Corlin Economics Report. We're going to talk about a couple of things. We're going to talk about Putin's biggest political mistake. That's called Ukraine. We're also going to talk about the consequences to the United States if mainland China decides to get back, for lack of better terms, Taiwan. Jimmy, let's start out with the Ukraine. What do you think Putin's ultimate plans are at this point?
Okay, Al. So I go back, and again, for those new listeners, I'm a Russian foreign area officer, Russian, Eastern European, Central Asian. So I've got a lot of experience. I've lived there. I've worked there. Did a lot of different things. And when I look at the strategy, I think there were four things that Putin wanted. The first was he wanted a pro-Moscow subservient leadership in Kiev, a government that supported Russian objectives.
Right.
Second, he wanted to stop NATO expansion into the region. The third, he wanted to protect his Black Sea fleet in Sevastopol, in the Crimea. And the fourth was he needed to send a message as like Western European influences were working their way east towards him to any of the former Soviet republics of not getting too close to the EU and NATO. And the examples were what happened in Georgia in 2008 with his invasion there. And of course, Ukraine in 2014 and the eastern areas in the civil war that's been going on there for a long time. It worked in Georgia for a while. The other part of it is he wanted to protect Lukashenko, the Belarusian leader, because he was under intense pressure from Western influences and some of the, you know, in his most recent election. So a lot of this was in order to stop the flow of West to East. Any strategist with half a brain, it would have been clear that NATO, and this has become a NATO-Russia proxy war, there's no doubt about it, but anybody looking from a wise perspective on the Russian side should have realized that it would work, that NATO would get involved and the European Union would get involved. And here are the three reasons why I think. NATO had been working in Ukraine since 1993 to modernize its military. The Ukraine military was an ally who fought with NATO in Afghanistan and in Iraq with the U.S.-led coalition there. So that's one. Number two, in 2019, regardless of whether you agree with it or not, Zelensky won a massive majority election, 73% of the vote, and his parliament was almost completely pro-EU, pro-NATO, with the exception of the breakaway areas. European leaders would never accept that election being overturned by force. And the only way that I think the Biden administration would allow that to continue, remember, they said that if he moved to the, if Russia moved and just took the east, it maybe it wasn't a problem. He said that in February, just before the invasion. But the only way the Biden team would have accepted it is if, in fact, they killed Zelensky very early, wiped out that government. Then there may have been some acceptance, and the EU and NATO probably would have been involved. But they failed at that. The Russians failed at that. And then new NATO members, former East Bloc nations, the third reason why anybody with a brain would have realized it would have never worked. They absolutely despise the influence Russia has. They loathe the intimidation and what had happened from the former Soviet days. And those new NATO members, former East Bloc nations, would never allow this to go forward for any length of time. So those strategies were a huge mistake by Putin not to realize that this would evolve into a NATO proxy war with his forces. And of course, we're seeing the results of that with stalemate after 11 months.
Yeah. You know, what I find to be interesting is in the comments section a couple of days ago, some of our listeners disagree with the fact that Ukraine really is a proxy war today between the West, between Ukraine and the West. I think it is.
Well, I think there's no question it is, and I think that there's a lot of propaganda from both sides, and that's just the reality of war, unfortunately. But here's the problem that Putin's facing. He's having to replace his leadership command again this week. He just fired General Savorkin. He had only been there for about 3 months. He replaced him with the MOD chief of staff. So the head of the military is now commanding the war in Ukraine. That guy is named Valery Gerasimov.
Yeah.
Gerasimov was actually in Ukraine. He was part of the operations early on. And back in 2014, but actually in May, he was almost killed. He was wounded by an artillery strike, I think it was right at the end of May, in Ukraine. And of course, apparently, according to some reporting, the United States said, hey, you can't kill this guy, the chief of staff, it would be a problem. So very interesting situation there. But the problem is, there's a fight going on between the Ministry of Defense and this guy named Evgeny Prigozhin, the guy that runs the mercenary group, Wagner Group. And Wagner Group is the one group that has been making a tiny bit of headway in this Soledar, this small area outside of Bakhmut this week, mm-hmm. that got a lot of headlines. And he's claiming that, in fact, his forces alone were able to take ground, and he's the only one capable of it. He's publicly demeaning Ministry of Defense officials in the Putin regime, the Putin administration. That's a very precarious position to be in. He has a lot of political influence. He's a close confidant of Putin. He was his former chef. He's a contractor. And then he has this mercenary group. But ultimately, it would be like Eric Prince of Blackwater telling Donald Rumsfeld, the Secretary of Defense, that, hey, your generals are incompetent. How long is that going to last?
Not very long.
In the Russian system? He's got maybe 40,000 troops. The Wagner group does. The MOD is probably a bit tired of it. So the problem with Gerasimov, the new commander down there, it's a problem that is going to stagnate, and it's going to be very difficult to overcome for a long period of time.
Yeah.
Even as they mass for potentially a spring offensive with another 100, 150,000 troops, and that's what it looks like maybe happening. The problem with that, Al, is if they begin another major offensive movement, the Ukrainians go back into digging in holes with a massive amount of Western anti-tank armor in small areas. It'd be very difficult for the Russians to sustain that effort for any length of time. So tactically, it's going to be a challenge no matter what. And that means stagnation right now, or potential moves back and forth that really just kill a lot of people.
Now, Jimmy, if I'm not mistaken, the emergence of the Wagner group is a relatively recent phenomenon.
Yeah, so he's been hiring them since Syria. It's been a while. Basically, I mean, this is like every bad guy movie you can imagine.
Yeah.
So very influential. They do a lot of operations specifically for the Putin regime. There's probably some assassination. Well, we know there's some assassinations. And he's on the international most wanted list, you know, from the...
Yeah.
So very, very dangerous guy. So
yeah, he is a very dangerous guy, actually. A lot of those guys over there, if not most of them, are very dangerous guys.
Well, let me say what I think is going to happen. Because this fight, you've got this internal fight right now. Things go on in Moscow. It's not a public, open debate, right? So this is going on behind the scenes. There is a power struggle going on.
Yeah.
And the problem is Putin, over time, does not have the industrial capacity, the economic power, the influence to actually make a difference to change the outcome of this war unless of a couple things happen. One, he'd have to increase his full-scale mobilization. Public would be very much against that. They were against the last mobilization. He'd have to get direct involvement from China, Iran, or Belarus. That's going to be tough. And nuclear war is really unacceptable for all sides, and I don't think he's going to make a dumb decision like that because it would sacrifice everything. So his problem is things are going to get ugly there politically in Moscow behind the scenes, and we may see some crazy things happen in the next few months. I'm predicting that you're going to see some real challenging issues behind the scenes in Moscow.
And on that note, we got to take a commercial break. Going to be right back to wrap this up. Jimmy, we got two subjects I want to talk about. One of the subjects right now is something we have been talking about, and that's the overall situation in the Ukraine. Let's take 30 seconds and let's wrap that one up, and then I want to talk about some internal political issues that are going on.
You bet. So I think Russia, and here's my prediction. Russia is going to have to face the reality they're fighting the NATO, U.S., entire military industrial complex, and the West will continue to print money and build weapons as long as the Ukrainians are willing to fight and die for it. So that's going to be problematic with Russian industrial capacity and their ability to sustain this over a period of time. That's just a reality that we can't, that I think he's going to have to come to terms with, which means that Russia will probably have to settle with some sort of agreement eventually to keep the fleet in Sevastopol for a price. Some marginal autonomy in the Donbass and some of those other areas that are still Russian ethnically, you know, more favorable. And then overall, though, an embarrassing withdrawal. I don't know if he'll make it through politically beyond that. And I expect to see some problems behind the scenes. And what we saw in the early 90s with the fall of the Soviet Union, with Yeltsin coming to power, and then, of course, the potential coups over Gorbachev, and then the attack on the White House, there's a strong possibility we're going to see that kind of stuff happen, and it's going to happen very fast. So anyway, that's a little bit more than 30 seconds, but I think important stuff for people to consider. At least one view of it.
Right. To make the show really complete, let's get into some political issues, Ryan, domestic political issues, because we got a really big thing going on, Jim.
You bet. I think one of the most important things that are happening in the United States right now is the trial, Missouri v. Biden.
Yeah.
That is where the attorney general from Missouri, now Andrew Bailey, he took it over from the previous AG who just was elected in the Senate. But Andrew Bailey has released documents this week showing a direct involvement of senior White House staffs working with big tech to censor information, in particular on COVID. Now, this is a very important court case, and these documents were filed and actually released because of the court case and the discovery process. So they're accurate. This is not speculation. This is not a conspiracy theory. Andrew Slavitt, at the time, was a senior advisor for the Biden COVID-19 response team. And Rob Flaherty, the White House director for digital strategy, they went to Facebook and basically were convincing Facebook to take down information to help stop vaccine hesitancy. And in that, Facebook admitted to them that not only were they doing that, but they were also silencing true information because it might, quote, look shocking or alarmist or sensational,
right,
unquote. And they promised to take down more of that, and that's with Facebook. Other documents have shown that they worked directly, a document from April 22, 2021, that Flaherty told Google that they were funneling people into hesitancy. And what were they going to do? Basically, what were they going to do to stop it?
Right.
And, of course, these documents are identifying contacts with Instagram, with Twitter. We've seen from the Twitter files the amount of influence that they were using there, with Google and YouTube, basically all our social media platforms, in order to silence information they thought was misinformation, which turns out much of it was accurate. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, using the influence and the threat of government intervention to force them to change their ideas. Of course, often in the Facebook case, they actually admitted that this was not inaccurate information, but we're going to silence it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Very important legal case, very damning to the Biden administration. When you start adding up things like what's happening with the classified information, the silencing of information here, the realities of the failure of the COVID vaccinations, and of course, the economic situation that we're living in, not to mention the absolute disaster of international relations with the Afghanistan debacle and what's happening in Ukraine right now. This administration they are in dire, dire straits.
The Biden administration, I got to tell you, that's the understatement of the day. We're recording this on Friday, you guys. The understatement of Friday the 13th is the Biden administration is in dire straits. I don't see any way in hell, Jimmy, that particular administration is going to get reelected.
And this is the interesting political angle underneath, what's happening inside Washington and the White House.
Yeah.
I think Tucker Carlson did a little piece yesterday. I thought it was interesting. He basically said, and by the way, in this court case that we were just talking about, Missouri v. Biden, they identified how Flaherty actually tried to censor Tucker Carlson, the most listened to opinion host on television. But anyway, beyond that, Carlson did a piece talking about what's happening with the Democratic Party. And his theory and thesis is that the Democrats have actually, with this classified information stuff, are basically throwing Biden off the bus, trying to get him out early so that they can get another candidate in there that they could win in 2024. I think there's some possibility to that theory, but here's the problem behind the scenes.
Okay.
Kamala Harris, very incompetent staff, is trying to hire people in, and it's just constant revolving door because of her incapacities and her failures on the board, numerous things, and her very low public approval rating. She's not a viable candidate.
Uh-huh.
Biden has said
he wants. No, she's not. She should be, but she's not.
Biden has said he wanted to run again, and of course, you know, he's shown publicly this sense of anger, and he's been attacked journalists the other day, just like crazy loud arguments. These kind of incoherent rantings or rap, you know, that really don't make any sense. And of course, we know he's mentally very limited in his capacity to think through problems.
Yeah,
but he and his wife, more importantly, Jill, are still pushing him to run again. So there is a fight internal of the Democratic Party of how this is going to turn out. The longer that Joe Biden stays in office, the harder it is. And the longer he goes without admitting or announcing his candidacy for re-election, the harder it is for another potential candidate to step into the wings to win the election in 2024.
Of course.
That's a hard challenge for the Democratic Party right now.
Yeah.
And as you get more and more information popping out about the censorship issues, about, you know, the economic failures, about the unbelievable inconsistency with their statements on the documents with Mar-a-Lago and what they've done, it becomes politically, and you've got to understand, most people only hear the big topics, right? They don't listen to the details. So what's going on behind the scenes, they're not paying attention to. But the big ticket items right now, economy, this classified information, that's all going in the wrong direction for them. The border is going in the wrong direction.
Of course
for
it
them.
Is.
Crime is going in the wrong direction for them. So they're going to have to make a change very quickly. Tucker may be right, but I think that fight's going to be very difficult underneath to get Biden to back out, which is going to make it even harder for the Democrats down the road, especially as the Republican House of Representatives goes on this, these investigations that are going to highlight the involvement with China and Hunter Biden and the DOJ cover-up and the FBI cover-up of political actions that have undermined a sitting president. They attacked a sitting president. They attacked Donald Trump. The DOJ and the FBI lied in order to continue prosecuting Donald Trump, and they've gone over and over again. And Merrick Garland is absolutely the most politicized attorney general in the history of the United States.
That's right. There's no question about that. I mean, the Democrats have not handled this thing properly, in my opinion. Jimmy, we're at 9:26. You know, we got to cut it at 10, so we're getting very, very close. Let me just say this, kind of in closing, that the Democratic Party is up against challenges that I think they're not insurmountable, because, you know, they're known to not exactly tell the truth, for lack of better terms. But I will say that these challenges that the Democrats are up against are formidable. There's no question about that. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what's going to happen here shortly. You guys, we're out of time. Stick around. Be back next week, please.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.